Chapter 6, Lands Beyond the Sea. Without a word to his father or to anyone else, Henry Longfellow wrote a secret letter to the editor of one of the magazines that had been buying his poetry. He wanted a job, he explained politely. He wanted to breathe a little while in a literary atmosphere. Even though he had promised his father that he would study law, Henry still hoped to avoid it somehow. The editor crushed the young man with the same advice his father had given him. It is impossible to earn a living in America as a writer. Mr. Longfellow had said that Henry could study at Harvard before beginning his law work, but that was just putting it off a year. Remember, he said to Henry, when you finish your year at Harvard, you will have to study law. But the professors at Bowdoin had been watching young Longfellow too. Before he could start his year at Harvard, his father returned one day from a trustees meeting at Bowdoin and said, Bowdoin wants you to return there and teach. There is a new position open. They need a professor of modern languages. Someone to teach French, Spanish, Italian, and maybe German. Henry Longfellow became excited over that. They would hold the job for him while he went to Europe to learn a few languages. Maybe Papa will forget about the law, he confided to Anne and Betsy. His father surprised him. Of course you can go to Europe to study for a year or two, said Mr. Longfellow. But you can't sail until next spring. So in the meantime, you can study law in my office. The romantic young man with poetry in his heart, his head full of dreams of traveling like his writer hero Washington Irving, tried his best to keep his mind on his father's law books. The law office was one of the front rooms of the house on Congress Street in Portland. Perhaps your brother Stephen and some of your friends can study law with you, said Mr. Longfellow. That was a mistake. Mr. Longfellow couldn't be there to look after them, and Henry and his friends had more fun than work for a few months. Anyone walking past the house could hear them laughing and talking and carrying on at a great rate. Nobody learned very much law. Sometimes Henry would go off into a corner by himself and write verse. The waiting was over at last, and the whole family rushed around getting Henry ready for his journey. Mrs. Longfellow was most worried about what he should wear. She talked to everybody she knew who had ever been to Europe. Stephen was off to his own affairs and not worried about Henry at all. Anne and Betsy chattered about the letters they would receive from faraway places. "Can you write to us every day, Henry?" Of course not, said Mrs. Longfellow. Henry is going abroad to study. He can't spend all of his time writing letters. Alex, Mary, Ellen, and Samuel were too young to be helpful, but they joined in the commotion and ran up and down stairs whenever anyone else did. Everybody gave a lot of advice, especially Mr. Longfellow's friends. Some said, go to Italy and study Italian. Others said, go to Germany and study German. Henry had a dream of his own. His hero, Washington Irving, was in Spain. What do you think of the idea of going to Spain? He asked his father cautiously. I think it would be a good idea to go to Spain and learn some Spanish, was the answer. Before 19-year-old Henry went aboard the sailing ship in New York, one more thing happened to add to his dreams and excitement. A publisher in Philadelphia was bringing out a large book of poems, and he wanted some of Henry's poems for the book. I can write, Henry gasped. I am going to be a writer someday. And he sent the publisher 3 brand new poems. Then off to Europe, the land beyond the seas, the faraway land of storybooks. After 30 days at sea, Henry Longfellow reached the coast of France. I have reached the shores of the old world, he wrote to his mother, and he told her that the voyage had been safe. "The country folk here wear wooden shoes full of feet and straw," he wrote to Stephen. He was headed for Paris, which was inland, and he wrote his sisters a long letter about the carriage, or diligence, in which he rode to Paris. A man on horseback galloped alongside the carriage, cracking his whip over the horses' heads to make them trot faster, he explained. And the roads were dusty. As soon as he reached Paris, he wrote to his father and promised him that he would study hard. Henry Longfellow was not alone in Paris. He and six other young men were living at the home of Madame Potel. She decided that she was the mother of them all, and she sat at the head of the dinner table each evening, making all the young men speak French. "You have come to France to learn to speak French," she told them firmly. "I must hear French." It was hard to do, but they knew it was good for them. They knew, too, that if they spoke English or any other language, Madame Potel would make them pay a coin. Paris was hot and noisy in the summertime, and Henry Longfellow had arrived just as the summer was starting. His classes at the University of Paris would not begin until the fall. Why not see the country meanwhile? He packed a knapsack and started out on foot to see the French countryside. He wandered along country roads, past golden yellow wheat fields sprinkled with red poppies. He saw French villages and towns, and he met the farm folk. If he liked a town, he stayed there a while. He saw forests and woods that reminded him of the woods in Maine. This was a new kind of freedom for Henry Longfellow. He had never been really far from home before. Here he could almost do as he pleased. He traveled all summer making friends with everybody. "It's easy to learn to speak French here," he wrote home to his family. "The French are always talking." When the air began to feel cool and crisp enough for study, he returned to Paris and settled down to his classes at the university. His father was keeping track of him. "Your trip is costing me a great deal more than I expected," Mr. Longfellow reminded Henry. "I hope you are working and not wasting your time." Henry thought guiltily about the time he had wasted all summer, so he tried to make up for it by studying hard all winter. When spring returned, though, he began to dream of all the strange places he wanted to see. Spain. Wintertime in Paris was cold and gloomy, but summer in Spain would be sunny and warm. "I am on my way to Spain," Henry wrote back to Portland. Mail took so long to cross the ocean that he was in Spain before the letter reached his family. He traveled south in another diligence, down through France and across the mountains. Henry began to see a wonderland, a land he would never forget. He hadn't written much lately. Spain made him remember that he was a poet. "White hamlets hidden in fields of wheat, white cities slumbering by the sea, white sunshine flooding square and street, dark mountain ranges at whose feet the riverbeds are dry with heat. All was a dream to me." He saw Moorish mosques, farmers leading donkeys with panniers on their saddles, windmills, groves of dark green olive trees, orange orchards, and castles on hilltops. At last he reached the city of Madrid in the center of Spain. He had never seen a city like this one before. It was the most beautiful city in the world, he was sure. Rows of buildings gleamed white in the sun, each one a palace. Harder to study here. Too many things to do and too many places to see, in Madrid and all over Spain. Henry Longfellow was still only 19. He was too young to settle down. "I'll do as much studying as I can," he promised his father. Henry Longfellow had a real talent for languages, and he was quickly learning to speak Spanish. The day he met Washington Irving was Henry Longfellow's greatest day in Spain. The author of Rip Van Winkle was hard at work at his desk in Madrid. To Henry Longfellow, he had a most beautiful countenance, with dark hair and a beard that was turning gray. Washington Irving was jovial and friendly, and he nodded and smiled at his young visitor. "How do you do, Mr. Irving?" said the young man, who was so full of poetry that he hoped to write. "Please sit down and wait a moment," said Mr. Irving. "I must finish this sentence." He finished writing his sentence and then sat back in his chair to talk to Henry Longfellow. "I am writing the life of Christopher Columbus," said Washington Irving. "I must work long hours every day, because the publisher is waiting for the book. I start every morning at 6 o'clock and work all day long." Henry felt ashamed of himself. He knew that he, too, ought to be working hard instead of rambling around the country. Mr. Irving liked Henry, and Henry liked Mr. Irving. Washington Irving took the young man under his wing. He gave him advice about writing, and he introduced him to other interesting people in Spain. Henry could not stay in Spain forever. He must move on and see other countries. What about Italy? The students at Bowdoin might want him to teach them some Italian when he returned. An unexpected letter from home made him want to go straight to Germany and omit Italy altogether. It was from a boy named Ned Preble, who had gone to Portland Academy with Henry and Stephen Longfellow. "My family is letting me study abroad," wrote Ned Preble, "and I am going to the University of Göttingen in Germany. Can't you come there too? We could room together." An old familiar friend, after being away from home so long. Someone his own age to whom he could tell all of his adventures. That would be almost as good as going home, if he could find someone from Portland in Europe. Or why not just go home? He'd been traveling in foreign countries enough, and he felt homesick. It would be fun to wander through the woods of Maine, or walk along the streets of Portland, or watch the sailing ships come and go in the harbor. His family could tell from his letters how homesick he was. "Don't be discouraged," his father wrote him. "Remember, there is a good job waiting for you at Bowdoin. As long as you are in Europe, you may as well learn all you can. Why not go to Italy, and then to Germany?" Henry did as he was told. He usually did as his father wished. But he wrote home again. "Tell Mama and all the family that before I left them, I did not know how much I loved them." So, after saying goodbye to Washington Irving and other friends in Spain, Henry Longfellow traveled on, alone. The first Italian city he visited was Genoa, and he didn't find it very interesting, in spite of all its beauty. From there, he went on southward to Florence. "Might as well stay in Florence to study Italian as anywhere else," he decided. Florence was a beautiful city, too. After a few weeks, though, Henry moved on, traveling still farther south to the city of Rome. He found a room with a family named Persiani. They turned out to be charming people and merry company for the solitary young man. The daughters were talented. One could play the harp, and another could sing and play the piano. Rome was going to be attractive after all, now that he had friends. And there were the Pantheon, the Colosseum, catacombs, theaters, and carnivals. "You can judge from my long residence in Italy that I am much pleased with it. Its language is very beautiful," he reported to his family. In Italy, Longfellow met another young American student from Rhode Island, who became his lifelong friend. George Washington Greene was stopping at the same house in Rome. Longfellow and he had met on the journey from France to Genoa, and they were overjoyed to meet again in Rome. Green was the grandson of the famous general Nathaniel Green, who had fought so bravely with General George Washington in the American Revolution. The two young men often went sightseeing together. Longfellow learned to love Italy nearly as much as Spain, and he stayed there for almost a year. Italian was a beautiful language. As soon as he was able to read in Italian, he discovered the works of Italian poets. He was really beginning to enjoy languages. His job at Bowdoin was going to be interesting. Then came the news from home. Bad news. A letter from his father. "I'm afraid Bowdoin College has changed its mind. After we've spent so much money training you, and after you've spent so much time in Europe, Bowdoin College has decided they don't want you as a professor after all. They think you are too young. Would you be willing to be an instructor at Bowdoin? The salary would be much lower." Angry, hurt, his hopes dashed. Henry Longfellow didn't know what he was doing for a little while. Would he have to be a lawyer? He rushed around his room, throwing things into his suitcase, trying to choke back the tears. Even if it did mean he would have to be a lawyer, he could not accept such an insult from Bowdoin. He sat down with pen and paper. "My dear father, they say I am too young. Were they not aware of this 3 years ago? I will certainly not accept a less important job for a lower salary." "Think it over more carefully," his father wrote back. "As long as you are in Europe, you may as well go on to Germany and learn to speak and read German. Remember that this is what some of my friends advised. After all, you are very young." Again, Henry did as his father told him. He said goodbye to the Persianis and set out for Germany, to the city of Göttingen and Ned Preble. "What took you so long to get here?" Ned Preble asked when Henry Longfellow finally arrived. "My father wanted me to go to Italy first," Henry explained. Ned's room was a real student's room, with two long swords hung crisscross on the wall. And when Ned took Henry out to show him the town and introduce him to all his friends, Göttingen turned out to be very different from Italy or Spain. Henry saw young men in frock coats and buckskin breeches, peasant boys in blue smocks wearing round black caps on their heads and smoking long pipes. Peasant girls carried great baskets of vegetables on their backs. The houses had steep, pointed roofs. The university was the most important thing in Göttingen, and it seemed that everybody in town was either a professor, a student, or a tradesman. At first, Henry was lost among the hundreds of young men. He couldn't converse with them until he learned German, so he concentrated on that. He couldn't forget his disappointment, though. He couldn't forget that Bowdoin thought he was too young. They were mistaken. Hadn't he already had some of his poetry published? Someday maybe he would be as famous as Washington Irving. Then what would Bowdoin have to say for itself? He closed his eyes and began to dream of Washington Irving. He dreamed about writing his own book, many of his own books. "I am planning to write a book of my own," Henry confided to his father. "I am going to write about my travels in France and Spain and Italy and Germany." He discovered that he liked German as much as he had Italian, and he liked to read books written in German. There was a huge library in the city, and after a while, the librarian let him take books to his room. "May I stay in Germany a little longer than we planned?" he wrote to his father. He had been away from home for 3 years, but his father let him remain longer. After a few months, though, Mr. Longfellow had to change his mind about allowing Henry to stay in Germany. I think you had better think about coming home soon, Henry. Your sister Betsy is sick, and the doctor says she may never get well. That gave Henry a new case of homesickness. Each letter that came from home, from Anne, from his mother, from Stephen, made him more homesick. He wanted to see Betsy. He wanted to talk to her about all his travels and adventures. Maybe he could cheer her up so she would get better. He packed his things, said goodbye to his friends in Germany, and started for home. He had to go to France to board a ship. Here, another letter reached him that sent his spirits still lower. He opened it eagerly, but let it drop from his fingers. Betsy had died before he could even get home to see her.